Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
Ring out the old fiscal crisis and ring in the new. As New York remembers Gerald Ford much more fondly than it regarded him then, the state is getting ready to greet the new governor, Eliot Spitzer, with a projected $4 to $5 billion budget deficit. On New Year's Day, we will bring you Governor Spitzer's inaugural address live. Our coverage begins at 11 a.m. With us now to talk about the changing of the Empire State Guard is none other than the Grand Dragon of Albany Public Radio, the mother of all political analysts, though that may be a line in bad taste on the day that Saddam might be hanged. Alan Chartok. Hi, Alan. Happy New Year and Happy New Era.
How you doing?
Good. I'm good, and good to have you. Can we start by looking back? Were you in the political science business yet when the Daily News ran perhaps its most famous headline ever on October 30th, 1975, Ford to City Drop Dead?
Are you kidding? You're talking to a 65-year-old man, but of course, 65 is the old, is the new 40. So I was certainly here.
Yeah, so you're just reaching your prime. And the Daily News article, which was never as famous as the headline, quoted then-Congressman Ed Koch saying, "I look out the window and the faces aren't those of barbarians, they are those of the White House."
But you know, he never said it.
Ford never said drop dead.
Right, of course not. He wasn't that kind of guy. I mean, you know, he was a nice man. People knew that about him.
Yes, but now even staunch New York partisans of the day, like Koch and Felix Rohatyn, look back and say Ford's initial refusal to bail out the city probably helped it recover in the long run. And we'll talk about this more with some other guests later in the show. But do you have an opinion about that? Did you at the time?
Well, no. I mean, I think that Ed Koch, who has turned so far right that one forgets that he started his career at the Village Independent Democrats and was regarded by much of New York's community as a progressive, has really turned into a guy who likes to do every kind of apology for the contemporary Republican crowd that he can. So I think it may have more to do with Ed Koch's conversion than with what Ford may have been up to at the time.
All right. So we seem to have a new fiscal crisis dawning in New York State. Even as the city is running a surplus, Governor Spitzer is expected to take office Monday into the teeth of a multi-billion dollar budget deficit. Why is that?
Well, it is a tradition, Brian, for outgoing governors to leave lots of problems for the incoming governor, particularly if they're in a different political party. And I'm not at all surprised by this. I happen to be a guru in New York on politics, but I happen to live in Massachusetts. And much the same thing is going on there now.
Dragon. I said mother of all political analysts. I didn't say guru.
Well, I'm saying guru.
And I always thought it was guru.
Oh, brother. This is going to be a long 35 minutes.
but seriously, did Ford, I'm sorry, I don't mean Ford. Did Cuomo leave Pataki in a fiscal hole?
Not only did Pataki say that, whether it was true or not, but he said it till the day he walked out the door. I mean, his mantra was the terrible shape that he found New York in and how he had to reconstruct it. Now, of course, if you talk to Mario about this, it's going to be an entire different picture painted. But the fact is that a lot of these figures are elusive. And a lot depends on who's crunching the numbers.
In the Ford to City days, New York City was the fiscal drain on the rest of the state. Now it seems like the city is the glue holding the state fiscally together, while upstate sinks. Have upstate and downstate traded fiscal places?
I think that to some degree that is true. A downward slide. The upstate, you know, upstate they don't have. They don't have the stock exchange. They don't have the fiscal engine. You know, Eliot Spitzer raised a lot of eyebrows when he campaigned upstate and said that upstate was a part of Appalachia. Well, I'll tell you right now that a lot of people said, ooh, is he going to get away with having said that? But everybody upstate shook their heads and said, yep, he's right about that. This is a basket case. One of the reasons I suspect that both Schumer and Hillary Clinton, now you'll remember that when Hillary Clinton came upstate, everybody said she's going to get, she can't win. They hate her upstate. She ended up not only carrying upstate, but doing so rather decisively because she didn't take any prisoners also and talked about how upstate New York had to be transformed into more of an engine. And Pataki has obviously worked very hard on that not hard enough, but right now, the drain, the brain drain, the student drain, the young people drain from upstate New York is just incredible.
I've been looking at some of the end of Pataki, beginning of Spitzer press clips this morning.
Right.
And I thought we might go down some of these headlines and get your take on them.
Sure.
The Journal News from Rockland County has an article headlined, "Just How Liberal Is Spitzer? Only time will tell." And I wonder what you think, Alan. Is the revenge of the liberals at hand after 12 years of the Republican rule or something short of that?
Well, it depends on what you mean by liberal, Brian. I have to tell you that I don't think Eliot Spitzer has ever been a tremendous liberal. I think he's a fair man and a very fair man. And I think, but if you look at things like the death penalty and other traditional sort of liberal things, he is not that kind of liberal. If you look at something like gay rights, he's terrific, at least terrific according to what I think, is very progressive. But he's been a very tough guy as Attorney General. He is not somebody who is going to mess this up by taking positions that are not well thought through and balanced.
In fact, I think Spitzer wants to be super successful. We know he's extremely ambitious and even has eyes on the presidency someday. And he's going to show us, I would predict, a sister soldier moment, if you know what I mean, pretty early on. And by that, I mean he will make a big show of talking back to some high-profile Democratic Party constituency like Bill Clinton did with Sister Soldier in 1992 to show white America he could talk back to African Americans. Do you expect anything like that with Spitzer?
Well, here's the deal. I agree with you, and I don't think he's going to like either of our saying it, but we'll say it anyway. I think he does have his eye on the White House, and I think he's going to make a very attractive candidate, and I think you're quite right. He has to position himself as somebody who is not a way out there in space liberal guy, and that is why you see positions like the death penalty from him, although I truly believe he believes in them. Now, when you take a look at him, it's all about, to me, it's all about changing the ethical boundaries of Albany. And in that, he's going to get a lot of help, whether he likes it or not. In other words, if it was all about the economy, stupid, in a presidential election, this is all about fixing Albany now. And so you see Joe Bruno. What did Joe Bruno do that is different that has now got the attention of the feds? The answer is nothing. In other words, once again, the rules have changed. It isn't that they found Joe Bruno doing something different. It is that the rules are changing. The feds are looking at it. The FBI is looking at it. The Attorney General's office was looking at it. And what you're going to see now is a whole huge change in the way in which the government is conducted. Now, if I were Shelley Silver, for example, as the speaker, I've written this, I've said it. You get down and you say on your knees and say, "Governor, anything you want, I'm going to do." Because otherwise, the long arm of whoever is out there, just as it is with Bruno now, will be tapping on his shoulder also. So my sense of it is that Silver's got to go along. And I think you're going to find that the Republicans in the Senate, who are almost extinct, they're about to be displaced by the Democrats, are going to to are going to go along also with a huge ethics pact.
Now, Alan, I have to say, and my guest is Alan Chartok, president of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio in Albany, publisher of the Legislative Gazette, and professor emeritus at SUNY. That analysis gives Spitzer almost Mafia Don-like power to have federal prosecutors come down on Joe Bruno for this relationship with a gambling company or whatever it is that you say is not any different, the relationship, than it was before, and threaten to do something, find something on Shelley Silver if Silver doesn't go along with his reforms. Do you mean it that literally?
No. I think your warning here is correct. I think I said I don't know that I said that Spitzer has a line into the Republican Justice Department. I think it's that concomitantly everybody has decided at the same time that what they want to do, Brian, is to
clean up Albany,
fix Albany.
Which really means reform the power structure. Take power out of the hands of those two legislative leaders and disperse it more among more members of the legislature. Primarily, that's what it means?
Well, it's more than that. And it also means that everybody's got to be transparent. You know, George Pataki had this guy, Charlie Gargano. And Charlie Gargano was a guy who not only raised a lot of money for Pataki election time, but also was instrumental in who got what in state contracts and things of that kind. What Spitzer wants to do is put everything on the internet, bid everything out, let everybody see everything. Spitzer, of course, has a lot of money. And as I often said, some of our best politicians, JFK and others, Harriman, Rockefeller, we're billionaires. And why just do we love that? Because they don't have to steal. Their father stole, but they don't have to steal. So all I'm saying is that this is the right moment. It's all of these forces are converging.
Now, I have some other nominees for these possible constituencies who Spitzer may talk back to establish kind of bipartisan street cred. One is the teachers union in conjunction with how to spend the so-called campaign for fiscal equity money. I think that he might do an accountability thing with the UFT. Not that he has direct, you know, power over the city teachers union, but to try to at least make a rhetorical stand that says teachers need to be more accountable than they are, maybe even speak out against tenure, which I think he's hinted at in the past, and make a little bit of a show of it this time as he gets ready to spend those extra billions that were ordered by the court. Any thought?
I think you're right. You know, I think that this is a guy who believes in accountability and as well as transparency. And I think I love your way of going about this, talking back to somebody. I think the other one, and this is going to be fascinating, Brian, is going to be 1199, the union, the powerful healthcare union. Because, as you know, Spitzer has endorsed the plan for closing some of the hospitals and has, in fact, said there are going to be more. I think that that's pretty important. Remember that 1199 practically ran Andrew Cuomo's campaign, did run it. Jennifer Cunningham and was on release service to do that, and Cuomo took a lot of help from these unions, whereas Spitzer did not. And you may remember there was a little tiff with the teachers union during the campaign. There was some question about whether or not he was going to take the $11.99 money that was offered. I think you've really put your finger right on essential things, which are the unions. They're not very popular in New York right now.
Here's one more, the death penalty. We know he's pro-death penalty, especially for cop killers. And guess what? There was just that conviction of Ron L. Wilson on Staten Island for killing two New York City undercover cops in what appears like execution-style shots to the back of the head. Nobody can have any sympathy for this guy. And I wonder if he gets sentenced to death, which may happen next month in that Staten Island courtroom, it may wind up being Elliot Spitzer rather than George Pataki, Mr. Death Penalty, who presides over New York's first execution in decades.
Well, I think we know where he is. I think he hasn't made any bones about it. And it's interesting, even though a lot of people who listen to public radio are extraordinarily liberal, and we know that, and opposed to the death penalty, as many of us are, you know, there is a sort of grudging respect for, you know, for anybody who holds that position. In fact, there are many people, Brian, who think that George Pataki was elected, which was, he had a fairly small margin, but that the one thing he had going for him there was this the appreciation in many of these polls for death penalty candidate.
Back in 1994 when that was a big
That's
issue.
Right.
We'll continue in a minute with Alan Chartok and talking about fiscal crises old and new and other things. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with president of WAMC, Albany Public Radio, Dr. Alan Chartok, who also publishes the Legislative Gazette and is a professor emeritus at SUNY, and the host of Capital Connection, heard on Saturday mornings here on WNYC. And I want to take a call because Alan, Bob in Manhattan has a theory as to what relationship of Sheldon Silvers could come under more scrutiny if he doesn't toe the Spitzer line, as you were implying before. Bob in Manhattan, hello.
Good morning. Hey, and by the way, I really enjoy WAMC when I'm up in the Poconos. So,
great.
Anyway. Sheldon Silver is obviously in the hip pocket of Cablevision, Madison Square Garden. He thwarted the New York City's attempt to land the 2012 Olympics. He's thwarting the attempts to rebuild the Penn Station over in the Bartlett Post Office. He was recently just approved the Brooklyn Nets Stadium, but he was threatening to stop that because obviously Madison Square Garden doesn't want any competition. Thwarted all sorts of development in Manhattan. I'd say that's pretty big food for fodder.
So you think he's got a relationship with Cablevision that's worth investigating. Of course, he didn't ultimately stop the Nets arena, but I think there's anything there, Alan?
Well, look, the old way of doing business was that the leaders had relationships with a great number of people, many of whom were able to give money to their political parties. And the leader gave that money out and has given that money out. That has replaced, Brian, in the old days. I am so old that I remember when the county leaders ran everything because they were the ones who were giving out the money, collecting the money. But now the leaders are doing that. I think with transparency, and one of the things that they did, and Bob's question is pretty interesting. One of the things that they did was to abrogate much of the power of giving out the money to themselves. And we didn't really know what these relationships were. But when Cuomo demanded ethics reform, you'll remember that, Brian, they set up two ethics commissions, not one. They set up an ethics commission for the state executive branch, and they are as tough as nails. Those are tough guys. And nobody looks the wrong way without getting a visit from these guys. Then they set up for themselves a legislative ethics commission, which is regarded far and wide as the biggest joke that Albany has ever come up with. So one of the things we're thinking is going to happen, in addition to all this transparency, which Spitzer is demanding, is bringing the lobbying commission, which is pretty tough stuff, which has proven to be pretty tough, along with the two ethics commissions, putting them all into one agency, and woe be the person who votes against that package. That seems to me to be something that is very much on the horizon right now. I don't really know what those relationships that Bob is talking about are. I've certainly read about all of that, but I do think a new day is dawning.
And again, a reminder, we will have Elliot Spitzer's inaugural address live here on New Year's morning. Our coverage begins at 11 o'clock. Another article in the news today, the New York Sun this morning, headline, Spitzer may not have a crisis to waste after all. And that's a kind of oblique way into getting to this thought. It says, quote, a surge in Wall Street profits, an unusual slowdown in the growth of Medicaid, and a court decision scaling back the amount of money the state owes New York City's public education system means that Mr. Spitzer will have more breathing room to craft his budget and deliver on his campaign promises than earlier fiscal forecasts indicated. In other words, maybe this budget hole we talked about before won't be so big after all. Reaction?
Precisely. Yeah. No, I think that's right. I was thinking about your brilliant analysis, Brian, about talking back. And there's one you missed.
Mm-hmm.
And that was Hevesy. Remember that there was the initial test. Was Elliot Spitzer going to take care of his own? Or was he going to be forced, even if he liked Alan Hevesy, and a lot of us like Alan Hevesy, to say nope, this is going to be a tough time, and we are going to impose a new set of rules for everybody, and we're not going to look the other way, and he did it. And when you read that little quote about a crisis not wasted, there was a crisis that he might have had to spend a lot of capital on,
right,
which it turns out because of David Soares, the fighting DA up here. He doesn't have to do.
Right. And you know, I even wonder along those lines if Silver, who was wavering on the Atlantic Yards project, which has been big, big news here downstate.
Right. Who talked to him?
Yeah. Did Spitzer talk to him and said, get this off my plate before I start? Who knows?
Yeah. No, who talked to him? That's right. And, of course, now coming up, we're going to watch who gets to replace Hevesy, and how much play Spitzer will have in that. Because, as you know, we have an oligarchy in the legislature, which means that one guy is at the head of that oligarchy, and that's Shelley Silver. So Shelley Silver gets to pick the next controller. We all understand that. The question is, will he have to listen to Elliot when he tells him, here's my thinking on this?
And if anyone else wants to get in, our phone number, 212-433-WNYC. 433-9692, or email brianlehrershow@wnyc.org. You know, on the fiscal equity lawsuit being downgraded, which that Sun article mentioned, from $5 billion to $2 billion a year by the court, I think it's one of the little mentioned pieces of the Pataki legacy. He packed the courts with conservatives, including the Court of Appeals, the highest court in the state, and liberals are going to have to live with that for years to come.
Well, I don't know that it's going to really be that long. I think you're going to find that Spitzer gets a chance to make heavy impression on the judiciary. And that's because, Brian, they have to retire at age 70, I believe.
Aging workforce on the bench?
It is. And I read one analysis which shows that he's going to be able to make a profound difference. When some of these guys are in power, I always think that the state ought to have the same thing that the feds have, lifetime tenure for judges. But then when Pataki created some of this misery on the courts, I said to myself, I like our system more.
It's interesting, maybe you're right about the aging judicial workforce. But as I understand it, between the time of the original campaign for fiscal equity decision, which was a liberal decision,
sure,
and this lowballing of the dollar amount, the majority on the court
shifted
a majority of more liberal appointees to more conservative Pataki appointees. So at least on that, we've seen increasing Pataki influence, even in the middle of that case, causing it to switch from this big statement to this statement.
And there are still a lot of jurists out there and judges and legal scholars who will tell you, no, it's just a matter of the law. Well, baloney. You're exactly right. You could see it, and it's one of the great shames of the way in which the judicial process works. They're not interpreting the law. They are going according to who appointed them.
By the way, here's an email that is correcting me, and if this listener is correct, then I was wrong to say that Spitzer could have Ronell Wilson executed and preside over the first execution in New York State in decades, because this says the conviction for the cold-blooded murder of the two undercover officers in Staten Island 3 years ago was a federal prosecution, Department of Justice, and not a New York State case. Therefore, it's George Bush and not Spitzer who must carry out the death sentence if the jury agrees to impose it. The feds took the case just so the death penalty could be obtained, says this listener. Do you know? That's not your purview up there, really.
No, I don't. But I shut up when you said it because I thought you were right.
Yeah, and another correction on this, that New York's death penalty law was struck down by the Court of Appeals as unconstitutional, which we know. So we don't have one now. So that even if it is a state case, the guy in Staten Island cannot be legally sentenced to death under New York law at this moment, because I guess that couldn't be retroactive, right, if the legislature does pass death penalty.
I would think that's right, yes.
And let's see here. Oh, somebody, another listener reacts to your use of the word oligarchy and writes, I am so sick of three people running the state of New York. New York State will never have a healthy political system until the power is forced from the hands of Bruno and Silver and back to the people, says Jason in Brooklyn.
Well, Jason's right, but I don't see how that's inconsistent with what I said.
No. He was agreeing. Yeah. He was just amplifying. He wrote in big caps, oligarchy.
Well, it is. And, you know, one of the things that ticks me off more than anything else in New York is that, for example, if you're in a Republican district and a Republican assemblyman, you don't get, and your constituents don't get. It's as if they're worth nothing. And same thing if you're a Democrat in the state Senate. You know, both Liz Krueger, who I really admire. I don't know how many of your listeners,
state senator from Manhattan.
Yeah, she's wonderful. She brought a lawsuit that just got tossed out by saying under the Constitution everybody has to be treated fairly, the court just threw it out. But she made the point, and that's why she's so courageous and such a decent person.
Coming up in 10 minutes, by the way, we will have two experts on Gerald Ford, more on the Ford to City drop dead legacy, including appropriately a Daily News reporter. And we'll also look at the little known role of Gerald Ford in the culture wars. You don't think of him as a culture warrior, but Gerald Ford spearheaded an impeachment attempt, which almost everybody looks back on as misguided, of liberal Supreme Court Justice William O. Douglas once upon a time. And we will remember that with a couple of guests in about 10 minutes after we're done with Alan Chartok from WAMC, Northeast Public Radio in Albany, and publisher of the Legislative Gazette and professor emeritus at SUNY. By the way, is Pataki really running for president?
Without question. There's no question. And, you know, there's a lot of speculation that one of his handlers, his traditional handlers, has been a woman named Zenya Muka. Mm-hmm. And that people see her hand here. Brian, put it this way. How are you going to tell somebody who many people believe was, what's the right technical term? A nebbish, to begin with. And he wins because he's the un-Cuomo candidate. And he wins and he gets to be elected three times the governor of New York State. How are you going to tell that guy that he can't be president? You cannot. And if you put a lie detector cuff on his arm and say, okay, George, do you really think you can be president of the United States? And he says, yes, it's going to be a straight line. Now, I happen to think that it's very strange that he hasn't figured it out yet. Every poll shows New Yorkers don't want him to run. The people don't want him to run. The country doesn't want him to run. And yet he's out there because he did it once before.
That's why, rather than because he's really running for something else?
No, everybody's got a theory, of course. But, you know, if he's running for vice president, what would he bring to the ticket?
Yeah.
He's not articulate. He's not a good speech maker. He doesn't bring a state with him. Obviously, New York is not going to do that. The polls are showing.
Well, he might be a geographical match for a John McCain, say, no?
No.
Without the threat to his power that a Rudy Giuliani might be?
Well, if I'm making that choice, I'm going for Romney, and I'm a big Romney fan. But Romney, who is much more articulate, much more presentable in Massachusetts, and by the way, who has the chutzpah to turn around and say, you know, I used to be a liberal, basically, but I'm not anymore. I woke up in the middle of the night, I had an epiphany. Pataki hasn't been able to quite do that yet.
David in Montclair, you're on WNYC with Alan Chartok. Hello, David.
Hi. My question is about the Spitzer and his presidential aspirations. You had said he was looking for maybe a sister soldier moment, and I'm wondering if taking on 1199 or the UFT or the teachers union is there a sufficient constituency nationwide to provide that sister soldier moment, or are there just more bigger in New York, and therefore wouldn't provide that same sort of resonance for presidential ambitions.
Alan, those are your examples. Yeah. What do you think?
Well, one of them was yours, one of them was mine. But
oh, that's right. UFT was mine. You're right.
Yeah, right. However, people do nationally don't like the unions these days. That is incontrovertible. But do I think that Eliot Spitzer is a guy who looks for those moments? I don't. I think that, because I know him fairly well, I think Eliot Spitzer is a guy who does what he thinks is right. And I think that is a big issue. Now, he made, for example, he got all kinds of credit for getting Balboni to leave that Senate seat out on Long Island and be his criminal justice guy in his cabinet, basically.
A Republican.
A Republican, which means the Democrats have now more people in that. The state is getting bluer and bluer, have more chance of doing that. Everybody, including me, said, what a brilliant move. Spitzer said, I didn't do it for that reason. Balboni was the best man. I still said it was a brilliant move.
Because he at once gets to free up a Republican seat in the state Senate for
right.
a special election, for the chance to have it go Democrat and shrink that Republican majority a little further. And at the same time, presumably, he gets points for having a bipartisan cabinet.
Precisely. And, you know, I said it to the Daily News and they had him quoted as saying, they had him quoted as saying, no, I didn't do it for that reason. And I said, well, he may not have done it for that reason, but it certainly was a brilliant move. Now, I think that in this case, he's in sync with the American people who have grave questions about the unions. I'm not endorsing that position. I'm just simply saying that here is Spitzer who is looking at this and is saying, what's right, what's wrong? And it turns out that his sense of what's right and wrong matches a great deal of what Americans are thinking right now.
We have 2 minutes left, and I want to put the change of power in Albany into context with the change of power in Washington and ask if you think that there's a link. I don't think I'm given to hyperbole, but I want to recognize the potential enormity of the political moment here. The voters swept Congress into Democratic hands for the first time in 12 years, and the majority of governorships also, I think, for the first time in that long. And it's possible that the ideology that Pataki and what started as the Gingrich Congress were elected on has run its course. Government is bad, never met a tax cut I didn't like, the death penalty and corporate lobbyists are good, plus the Iraq War debacle on top of that. It could be an epical change if the Democrats can capitalize. What do you think?
I think you're exactly right. That is exactly what happened. I don't think it was all about the other stuff. I think it was all about the war.
Which means Democrats have to be careful. If they, you know, if they think they're going to overthrow the never met a tax cut I didn't like, death penalty, et cetera. If it was all about the war, then they have to be careful on the other stuff.
Well, the other stuff goes along with it. The other stuff is what, you know, nobody really knows about it. Nobody really cared about it. You know, Americans don't really participate on the levels they ought to. We all know that. You know, more than half of them don't vote in a presidential election, which is our biggest election. But I do think that those things like Social Security and the others and the tax cuts for only the people at the top were not good for the Republicans. Mm-hmm. But I think the thing that turned the corner here was the war. And that's the final line as far as I'm concerned. And now they have to be very careful about who they run for president.
All right. And again, listeners, don't forget, I will be working New Year's morning as we bring you live coverage of Governor Eliot Spitzer's inaugural address and see much of how much of the stuff we've been talking about here he actually brings up and signals some kind of change of direction for the state of New York. And I want to thank Alan Chartok, president of WNYC. I don't think it's open. President of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Thank you so much and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. You do a great job, Brian.
Thank you, Alan. You too. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. When we come back in a minute, those little discussed aspects of the Ford legacy, including Gerald Ford as culture warrior, believe it or not, once upon a time. Stay tuned. Thanks for listening to the Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.